Okay, we're recording, so this is like official. I don't have to do it. Okay, everybody. I think that what the description of what I was supposed to teach has to do with the whole session here in the middle part has to do with machlokes and intolerance and sinas chinam, as we're going to discuss. And if I understood Rabbi Benowitz correctly, he wanted me specifically to speak about the issue of religious intolerance, the idea of people having to be the same, look the same, think the same, act the same, in a religious context. So first of all, I just want to apologize for my voice. I kind of came down with something during the very beautiful Shal Shuddis this past Shabbos in Gush, and I haven't been able to recover from it yet. So I apologize if it's grating on you. It's not so easy to speak, so I can imagine it's a little bit hard to listen to me, so I apologize. Obviously, when we think about machlokes, people disagreeing, they're basically two types, right? There's the interpersonal stuff, the petty stuff, your neighbor who drove over your lawn, or whose dog keeps on going into your backyard, or the guy in shul who's always bothering you, or the kid in class who's picking on you, or that you're picking on, let's be honest, okay? But we're not also innocent, right? That's the petty, personal parts of life. But there is a whole other part of fighting machlokes, intolerance, bad midos, which has to do with ideology, philosophy, group identification. I believe in this. I go to that school, not that school. Right? A lot of communities, there's the school you go to and the school you don't. There's always the shul you go to and the shul or shuls you don't. Or in some cases, if you live in one of those communities with a super shul, you get the minyan you go to and the minyan you don't. The people that you respect and the people you don't. The rabbis that you hold of and the rabbis that you don't. Does this sound somewhat familiar to you? Or are all of you guys living in Gan Eden somewhere that I haven't yet found? Right? This is unfortunately a common part of life. It's a little bit of an irony or a paradox. This is one of the things that sometimes the guys who come from smaller communities are a little bit blessed to deal with that. When there is only one school, so then you can fight about making the school better, but you can't pick what school not to go to. Right? And there's only one shul or only one rabbi. But the reality is, it's not about numbers. It's not about the people that are out there. It's really about what's in here and in here. And that's really what I'd like to speak about. Okay, so the first stuff is important, but that's not our agenda. And I want to start by telling you a story to kind of frame what we're going to be talking about. You're all old enough that you might remember in 2008 was one of the really horrible terrorist attacks in Israel, when on Rosh Chodesh Adar, there was an attack at the yeshiva and at the high school of Merkaz Harav in Yerushalayim. You guys remember that? You were more or less in what, third or fourth grade, or maybe second grade, or something to that effect. But it was pretty big. You might have some recollection. You sort of might have heard about it since then. Terrorists came in kind of a little bit earlier than now, but around this time at night, they're actually preparing for a big chagiga. And before he was actually killed, he ended up killing 8 kids. The youngest ones, about your age, maybe even a year younger, maybe, and the oldest in the early 20s. That was the range. It was a horrible, horrible attack. It shocked everyone. It really was a horrible attack, terrible. So I didn't yet live in Israel. I still lived in Baltimore, where I was rabbi of a shul. And a month later, on the Shloshim, 30 days after this terrible attack had happened, we had a very beautiful program for the community. On a Thursday night at the Aguda Shul in Baltimore, we had 2 shiurim for the entire community, all about Kiddush Hashem. And in between those 2 shiurim, a special memorial prayer, a Kel Mole, in memory of these 8 victims, the 8 Kiddush. The 2 speakers were Rabbi Yisachar Frand, a name that's probably familiar to most of you, very famous Rebbe and Magid Shir from Yeshivas Ner Yisrael, and me. We were the 2 speakers. Now, the reason I stress that to you, talk about how there's hundreds of people on a Thursday night, why am I stressing that to you? Because it was not lost on anyone, and it was really deliberate and beautiful, that here you had a situation which all different parts of the community were coming together to join for something. And it wasn't just the people in my shul who came to the shir, or just the Net Yisrael people who came to the shir, but people from across the spectrum came to the shir. This hat, that color hat, no hat, this yarmulke, that yarmulke, a colored shirt, a not colored shirt. Everyone came together. You believe in Merkaz HaRav, you don't believe in Merkaz HaRav. And at least for an hour or two, one night, there was a sense that all that other stuff didn't matter. Now, as it happens, Baltimore, better than most big cities, had a good amount of achdus. But it's not perfect. And the reality is, after this, like in many other communities, a lot of the other petty stuff came back. One of the things that I mentioned in that shiur on a Thursday night, 8-9 years ago, was that unfortunately, it seems like we need to have Jewish blood running through the streets in order to wash away the stain of Sinas Chinam. Isn't that a tragedy? Why can't we all come together? Why can't we all feel that sense of family without a terrorist attack? Now, two summers ago, you guys are already certainly old enough to appreciate this, we had a similar phenomenon during those 3 weeks when we were looking for the three boys. And I'm sure in all the communities that you guys are from, things were being done, people were coming together, none of the usual divisions. Because when there's a tsar, when there's a crisis, we're good. We know how to come together. But shouldn't we all hope? Shouldn't we all be able to live at that level, to do the same thing, even without terrorism, without death, without Jewish blood running in the streets? I think we all vote that we would want that, correct? So that's what tonight's shiur is about, to try to understand how can we get there. Let's diagnose the problem and then suggest, I hope, at least a partial or a potential solution. Now, I've used the term Sinas Chinam already once or twice. That term comes from one of the more famous Gemaras that deals with Tisha B'Av. The Gemara in Masechet Yuma, Adav Tes Amud Beis. When the Gemara says that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, why? What did the Jewish people do during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash? Don't be shy, you all know the answer. No, confused. The first Beis HaMikdash was the big three. Avodah Zarah, Shefichas Damim, Kili Arayos. But, continues the Gemara, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of, thank you, Sinas Chinam. Now, how do you translate that? This is not a trick question. It's not the SATs. You know, at some point, like, you know, I assume it's still true. When, like, they have those answers where, like, they think that you think that they're obvious, but the later on in the section, you know it can't be the obvious one. You torture yourself to find out the right answer. See, this is not a trick question. What does the word Sinas Chinam mean?
Baseless hatred.
Excellent. Baseless hatred. Now I'll ask a slightly harder question. What does that mean? Give me any example of baseless hatred.
It's like hating on stereotypes.
Okay, that could be. What else?
Hating someone because they're different.
Because they're different. Now, what might different be? Give me an example of different.
Religiously.
Okay, that could be, but I'm going to suggest that you're thinking in that terms, which is okay, because how I started my shiur.
Okay.
Let's say I would have asked you that question 10 minutes ago. I think different is right. People, it's part of, we're hardwired as human beings, unfortunately, to hate people who are different. But give me an example of different that relates to your everyday life. Where do you go to school?
Rambam.
Okay, in Rambam, for example, the five towns. Ooh, the five towns. Okay, what's an example of that? Where you're either the perpetrator or the victim, you choose. We'll learn a lot about you by what you choose, but that's okay.
Fast.
Huh?
Fast.
Yeah, okay, give me an example, anybody. I'm not trying to get anyone in trouble. Give me an example, anybody. What's an example of either, again, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be personal, I'm just joking. So just give me an example, just so we can get, well, we all know on the same page, yes. Good. A kid that's socially awkward, maybe in your school, or maybe it's, you know, in shul, where kids from different schools are together, and this guy's always a little different, and he just gets on your nerves, and he's got his own little idiosyncrasies. That happen?
Yeah.
You're familiar with that? Okay. Anyone else want to give me a second example? That was a good one, but I'm always happy for a second one. What's another example? Yeah.
I mean, like, there's intercommunal, where, like, you can be a part of a less religious community or a part of a more religious.
Okay, good. You're getting back to the religious thing.
But then I would also have another definition of what Sinat Chinam could mean.
Okay.
Right? And I think that it could mean hating somebody because you don't have a purpose for them. Right.
Okay, you see no purpose to them.
Yeah.
Good. That's a sophisticated way of looking at the term different. Right. They're different, so what could there be their purpose? Good. Yes.
They think differently than you.
Again, but in many cases that could be because they like the Yankees and you like the Mets. There have been fights over less, trust me. Right? So it could be very, very petty. And trust me, you all took a 6-week break from this, but you're all headed back to the Hillary versus Trump disaster for the whole world. So I'm sure in your community people are fighting over that. They certainly were fighting 4 years ago, and that was less extreme than it is now. Right? So politics divides people. Sometimes social class. Again, sports, right? Is at least wasn't there a story this year of some fans beating up another fan? Like, where was that?
In LA,
there was a San Francisco that they beat up some Giants fan, right?
Yeah, in LA, Jersey Dodgers game.
Right, they ruined his life. I mean, he'll never recover if I remember correctly. It's crazy. So again, that's because he was different. In this case, something really important like baseball, basketball. Baseball? Okay. Anyway. Fine. I think that is a simple understanding. Simple does not mean wrong. The pashup shot of sinas chinam is all the usual petty garbage that's part of life. The first type machlokas I spoke about. However, and this is a maramakum for you to keep in your back pocket for life, very, very important, there's a famous, famous comment of the Netziv. You guys have heard of the Netziv? Rosh Hashiva Valozhin, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. I have a nephew whose name is Naftali Tzvi Yehuda. That's not a coincidence. He's named after the Netziv. We just call him Naftali, but anyway. Or Nafi. Anyway, the Netziv, in at least 4 different places in his writings that I'm familiar with, but most famously, in his introduction to his commentary on the Torah, but he says it in at least 3 other places as well. This is a famous sheet of the Netziv. The Netziv defines sinas chinam as religious intolerance. That was his chiddush. As far as I know, no one ever said it before him. It's a very specific definition. When the Gemara said the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam, it did not mean all the other stuff. That doesn't mean it wasn't happening. But says the Netziv specifically talking about sinas chinam, religious intolerance. He says explicitly, when people would see somebody doing a mitzvah differently than they were, chashdu aleihem kachukos. Right? Now, I don't know, what does that mean different? You know, you wrap your tefillin out, I wrap it in. Okay, maybe that would be a little bit extreme, I don't know, but certainly, you wear a hat to daven, but I don't. You wear a gartel, but I don't. You wear a velvet yarmulke, but I wear a knit yarmulke. True story. 2 high school idiots, 16, 17-year-old kids, are fighting. And one says to the other, "Your knit yarmulke? The holes in that crochet, the holes there? That represents the holes in your emuna." That's idiot number 1. To which idiot number 2 responds, "Yeah, well, your black velvet yarmulke represents the fact that you're living in darkness." You know how I know that story? Because I was idiot number 2. I was the guy in the knit yarmulke who was being made fun of by the other guy. So I was very mature and I responded with that great comeback. Ridiculousness, right? Ridiculousness. But the truth is, as silly as that is, that's pretty much what everything is. So we fight over religious differences. Says the Netziv, any little difference. They made a mountain out of molehill. Chashdolei kapikaris. You have a little differently than me. You're not from. You don't go to the same shul as me. You do say the tefillah for the Medina. You don't say the tefillah. You stand for the soldiers. You don't stand, you're not firm. Says the Netziv, that's what was happening during the second Pesach Mikdash. Now he adds something that is, he adds scary on top of Chiddush. That's his big Chiddush. He then adds something which, as far as I know, no one else says. He says, when the Gemara says that in the first Pesach Mikdash they had the big three, and in the second Pesach Mikdash they had the Sechino, not exactly. He said, because once you had all this religious intolerance, what did that lead to? Anyone want to guess? He said, it didn't lead to Hilei Arayos. There's no connection. But what did it lead to? Not Hilei Arayos. Didn't necessarily lead to Avodah Zarah, but what did it lead to? To murder. Because once I think you're not Bikoris, once I have no respect for you, you're not from, you're the problem. You are the problem. So how far is that from me to then going further and killing you? Says the Netziv, I'll give you two of his formulations. They're unbelievable. He says in one place, Shvichas Damim Beheter, or even more scary, he says in the other place, Shvichas Damim L'Shem Shamayim. They killed, but I'm not a murderer, I'm not a thug, a murderer. I'm killing L'Shem Shamayim. It's a mitzvah. I have to rid the world of these terrible people who wrap the tefillin the wrong way, who do or don't wear the gartel, or some other thing like that. You hear what I'm saying? So we sometimes think, and guess what, we're not totally wrong, that there's a lot of intolerance in our communities and fighting over these things, but we shouldn't think that this is new. Says the Netziv, that was the cause of the Churban of the second Beis Hamikdash. Now why do you think this happens? Again, I don't care if you're from New York, Toronto, Los Angeles, Boca Raton, Teaneck, Chicago, Five Towns, and even Chile. You've all experienced some level of this. You're all certainly smart enough to envision even things that happen. Why do you think this happens? Why is it that the kid who wears the hat can't stand the guy who doesn't, or vice versa? The guy who doesn't has so much resentment for the kid who does. Like, why don't we just live and let live? Again, I don't mean all of us, because maybe some of us are not prone to this, Baruch Hashem. But we've probably all, at some point in our lives, been prone to something, and we've certainly all seen it from other people. Like, why do you think that is? That's not an easy question, but it might be easier than, why would someone kill another person because they root for a different team? That's like an impossible question to answer. But okay, this is a little bit easier, but a harder question. What do you think? There's no right or wrong answer to this. I'm just curious. Let's think a little bit, guys. Let's think. Those of you who've been in my show before, you know, we're usually more interactive than some of the other. Let's think. Let's participate. What do you think, Jan?
So, in my opinion, in an attempt, right, to justify what our actions and make what we're doing the right thing, what other people are doing have to.
Good, so it's a way of justifying our own actions. I think that's definitely a very strong possibility. Just reframe the problem in one word, which is very common in high school, but a lot of adults never leave high school, unfortunately. Insecurity. Right? We're insecure, right? Now, teenagers often have good reason to be insecure. It's not so easy to be a teenager. Right? There's definitely adolescence and finding yourself and figuring out who you are. That's very often a teenage issue. As I say, though, I know many adults who are still maturity-wise, still in high school. But when we're insecure, as Yaakov said, we're not fully confident in the decisions that we've made in our own life. So what do? We figure out a way to put down others to bring ourselves up. I think there is a lot of truth to that. Can anyone think of any other reasons why we might be intolerant to people who are different than us religiously? Yes?
Makes us feel that what we're doing is wrong.
If we put them down, it makes us feel what?
What we're doing is wrong. No, but they're doing something different.
Oh, so that's the flip side of what Yaakov said. Right? They're doing the different thing is a threat to us. Now, objectively, is it? Not really. Why? You know, pick any of the examples that we gave, you know. it's all going to come to them, and I don't. Ooh. I'm threatened. It sounds ridiculous, right? But people very often feel threatened by all sorts of things. Yes?
I think it's because we often think that there's only one truth.
Ah! Excellent. I love you. Perfect.
And when we feel that our way of living Judaism or life is the truthful and best way of doing it, then when someone else comes and says, no, you're doing it wrong, or not you're doing it wrong, but you're not doing it the same as you.
Excellent. So these are the two things that I thought of on my own. Again, it could be you guys can come up with other ones. But the first one is insecurity, and the second one is we often, many of us, are convinced that we have the exclusive truth. So because of that, how dare you not see the truth as clearly in the same way? Okay, so that's just as a kind of a bracket. I think that's, maybe there's other reasons, but I think those are the two big reasons, that I can think of at least, why we often have this tendency. So now, here's my question. Why is this so bad? Why is it so bad? So before I frame the question, let's continue the Gemara. So we start off by saying that the Gemara says the first base of Mikdash was destroyed. Why? Yes, the big three. And the second base of Mikdash was destroyed? Sinaskinim. Now, the Gemara, as I'm sure many of you know, either from your learning in school, your learning in the morning here, we're standing right in the Targum Shiurim, so if you're in his Shiurim, especially in his Gemara Shiur, you know, I'm sure he stressed this. Very often, the key to learning is to think between the lines. Right? So before you get to the next line of the Gemara, again, pretend you've all heard this probably in camp every summer of your life. Right? But if you had just heard this for the first time, with that parallelism that the Gemara sets up, one base of Mikdash, the big three, the other base of Mikdash, Sinas Levin, does that make sense to you or not?
No.
Is that what you would expect or not? It's actually totally surprising. And the Gemara, I think, clearly aware of that, draws out the seemingly shocking implication of the Gemara. The Gemara says, after saying the big three verses, the Gemara says, L'lamedcha. What has this come to teach us? Sheshkula sinas chinam keneged shalosh averos. You see, if three were big, good, were severe enough to destroy the first base of Mikdash, sinas chinam is severe enough to destroy the second base of Mikdash, apparently, what is the Gemara saying? Is any equivalency? Shkula sinas chinam. Now, that seems to be the unescapable conclusion of the Gemara. But just because the Gemara puts into words what we ourselves were kind of thinking, doesn't make it any less logical or easy to accept. Is that actually true? Is that really true? What's a halacha that you all know, which would seem on its face to be totally disproving of this statement? The Gemara just said, you see, they're equal. And what is a halacha that every one of you guys know, every one of you know, that proves that it's completely not true, it's just false? Come on, Jesse. What do you think? What do you know? I'll give you a hint. We keep on calling it the big three. What do we know about those big three?
That we can die before we
go. Yes! Anyone know what is that phrase in Hebrew, the Gemara's term for that? Yehareg Baal Yavar. Excellent, Jesse. Very good. So if that's true, anyone familiar with the Girsa, maybe like from the Cairo Geniza, or you know they found it somewhere, of the big four, give up your life for Sinas Chinam also? I've never heard of that Gemara, did you? So if we all know, are you really going to tell me that being mean to the new kid who moved into town, are you really going to tell me that that Avera of Sinas Chinam is as bad as bowing down to an idol? Do you believe that? Do you believe that?
No.
Okay. But who wants that? Do you believe that if I am mean to the kid who's on my basketball team who keeps on fumbling the ball every time I give it to him, and I just can't stand the guy anymore, plus he doesn't even know what to wear, and I'm mean to him on the court, do you believe that that's just as bad as Ritzicha? Do you believe that? You can say it. Don't be embarrassed. You sure?
Me.
I'm also sure. It doesn't make any sense. How could the Gemara say that it's the same thing? Is it really? It's not the same thing. So the Gemara is at least as smart as us. The Gemara can't mean it if it's ridiculous. So what do you think the Gemara really means? Yes?
Maybe not in the Makkum to fix up with Hashem. But in the Makkum, there's no way of fixing it up unless you like ask the guy for forgiveness.
And there is a way. You're right, there's an extra piece, you're right. That's true on Yom Kippur. Excellent, that's very good. So what I think, let's help you. I want to share with you an idea of the Maharal. Great idea of Maharal. Thank you. Question in a second. But perhaps, this is another important way when you're reading a Gemara. When the Gemara says Shkula, they're equal. So in theory, there are two different things that Gemara could mean. Now, it's not your fault, because I kind of led you down one path that wasn't so nice of me. But I think that's the reason you're all thinking in one way. No one yet has thought in a completely different way. One possibility of the Gemara is to say that the actions themselves are of equal severity. And that seems to be just very, very difficult, as we have demonstrated. But there's a whole other way of reading the Gemara, which is that not in isolation. If I would ask, you know, Rabbi, I got the confession to make. Sure, you can tell me anything. You know, yesterday I was mean to that nerdy kid. I wouldn't be happy. That's a bad thing. But I would probably react differently if you said to Rabbi, yesterday I went to the church and, you know, did a Hail Mary and bowed down to the cross. Right? They're not the same thing. So that can't be what the Gemara means. Perhaps what the Gemara means is shkula here. Shkula means the effect. That itself still needs explanation. But yes, in isolation, they're not the same thing. If you're asking me just as an avera for avera's sake, so to speak, per se, clearly they're not the same. But yet, apparently they have the ability to have equally disastrous effects on the Beis HaMikdash. Now this itself begs the question. If one is not bad as the others, so why is it just as destructive? So this we need one piece that the Maharal had. You guys have heard of the Maharal? He's the one who didn't make a golem. That's not true. That's a total farce. He did a lot of other brilliant things, but he never made a golem. Did you know that the Maharal didn't make a golem?
No.
Did you know that he did make a golem?
No.
Oh, did he? Well, then pretend I didn't say it.
Okay.
But many people I grew up taught that the Maharal made a golem. And somebody made up that story. It's a total lie. Anyway, but the Maharal of Prague, great, great genius, he says there's a fundamental difference between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash was super duper kadosh. Super kadosh. Nevi'im, the whole nine yards. Miracles all the time. The second Beis HaMikdash was awesome and amazing, but it wasn't as objectively holy. Anyone know what crucial piece of the Beis HaMikdash was not there the second time? There was no Aron Kodesh. There was no Aron. It didn't have the same level of holiness. So where did the Kedusha come from? There was no Luchos, no Aron. Says the Maharal, this is amazing. The Maharal says the Kedusha, the second Beis HaMikdash, came from the Kedusha of the nation of Am Yisrael. Our Kedusha as a people who wanted to be close to Hashem after 70 years. The first Golos was 70 years in Babel. 70 years, they wanted to come home. Wanted to be back and close with Hashem. That Kedusha of the nation enabled the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Not as great as the first one. Pretty darn nice. Says the Maharal, in light of that background, each of the two different Batei Mikdash were able to be destroyed, unfortunately, by Averos that cut at the heart of where their strength was. And this is not going to be a mashal. This is mine, not the Maharal's. It's the difference between a wrecking ball and termites. Your house, that's right, your house, and mine, and anyone else, could be destroyed in one of two ways. It's a big, strong, sturdy house. How are you going to knock it down? See, if you don't live in Florida, there's not going to be hurricanes. You need a wrecking ball. Right? Some big bulldozer or something that will come over. The force of strength of that machine or that ball is enough to break it. In essence, says the Maharal, the first Beis HaMikdash was firm, was sturdy, was super kadosh. But the force of destruction, those three averos, is so bad, they are strong enough like a wrecking ball. They could take down that temple. But when it
came to the second Beis HaMikdash, what did we say, Kohen Maral? What was the basis of the Kedusha? What gave that house vibrancy and vitality? The nation as a whole. Says the Maharal, once we had Sinas Chinam, and instead of being one big family, we were millions of bickering, fighting, petty individuals, without the power of the nation holding up the Beis HaMikdash, it was hollowed out from within. Okay, the way I envision it, like termites, right? You don't know you have a termite problem until it's too late, right? Everything on the outside looks fine, but on the inside, the wood, the boards, the foundation, it's getting hollowed out. And so all of a sudden, the building collapses on itself from its own weight. Says the Maharal, that's what the Gemara meant. Shkula sinas chinam. If the whole basis of the second Beis HaMikdash is Am Yisrael, is the fact that we're a nation, we're an Am, so without that, you don't have to come and wrecking ball destroy the Beis HaMikdash. You're just pulling out the whole foundation. Without that cohesion as a group, as a family, the second Beis HaMikdash went, boom. It's true, of course, Sinas Chinam is not a wreck. You could not take a wrecking ball of Sinas Chinam to destroy the first Beis HaMikdash. It wouldn't have worked. It's bad, it's embarrassing, it's an Aveira. But that's not enough to destroy the first Beis HaMikdash. It's not strong enough, it's not the big three. But the second Beis HaMikdash, which only existed because of who we were, without that, it just collapsed on itself. Now, for some reason, this problem has been very hard to fix. First, Golos lasted how many years, I said?
70 years.
And the second one lasted how long?
2000.
Well, it's still going, actually. Who knows how long it's going to go. This has been a very difficult, thorny thing to fix. Why do you think that is? How come, why can't we just get this one right?
Because in all the things that happened were so divided, so many different types of Jews.
I agree with you, but I want you to think deeper. Why is this so difficult? Okay, shayach. Just because I have different ideology does not have to mean Sinasim. You're right, it does. I'm saying, but why? Why have we not been able to get this one right? Yeah.
Some people don't want to come back together.
Okay, so some people are like, the heck with that. Right. If you want to agree with me, that's the kind of achdus I like. Heads I win, tails you lose. You know people like that? I do. Right? But me come to you, forget about it. Okay, that's another possibility. So I'll tell you, the Gemara itself, I think, alludes to. The Gemara says, the next line of the Gemara says, in the first place, in the Gesh, Nisgalu Avonam, their sin was, what does Nisgalu mean? Nisgalu, Galui, revealed, opened. Niskalu Kitzam, the end of the Galus was also well known and open. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, Lo Niskalu Avonam, Lo Niskalu Kitzam. That wasn't revealed and that wasn't revealed. What exactly does that mean? So anyone ever hear of the Ben Ishai? Anyone started here? Anyone Ben Ishai? I was looking at you. Okay, maybe I was, anyway. Who was the Ben Ishai, do you know?
Yeah, from
Baghdad. From Baghdad. That's right. And he died, in the early 20th century. He died in 1909. Great, great Sephardi Chacham from Baghdad, turn of the century. He died a little over 100 years ago. So he says something astounding. This is, I think, so true. He hits the nail on the head. Lo nizga, when it says in the first place of Mikdash, Niskalu Avonim, what he means to say is, even though they were doing the big three, in their heart of hearts, they knew it was wrong. Right? Think about it in your own life, right? There are plenty of things, I assume, in which you do wrong, but you know it's wrong. Right? You're not rational. Maybe to your parents or your friends you're rationalizing it, I don't know. But it's not that you really think there's nothing wrong with it. Right? You know there's something wrong with it. You have a yitzhara, you want to do it. Does that sound about right? This is not the time for group therapy. We're not going to start discussing those things all right now. It's for another time, maybe. But says the Ben Yehoyada, the Ben Ishai, in the first Beis HaMikdash, Nisgalu Avonam, they were doing the big three, there was murder, there was rampant sexual crime, all that stuff. And they were having a good time. But they knew it was wrong. And what's the only, what's one guarantee? If you know it's wrong, there's a chance you'll eventually do tshuva. When it came to the second base of Mikdash, it wasn't just that there was sin as chinam, which we're translating now as religion tolerance, but says the Ben Ish Chai, lo niskalu avogram. None of them really took it seriously. And because none of them really thought there was anything wrong, lo niskalu kitzam. How can you ever assume anyone's ever going to do tshuva for something they don't think is wrong in the first place? I'll again, just take one example again, which I know is, you know, in my class last night, someone actually mentioned it. Right? People using their phones or their computers to look at things that they shouldn't look at. Right? It's a hard thing to stop. Again, not our topic now. It's a hard thing to stop. It's not right. It's a hard, but there's a chance that you're going to stop, at least if you know it's wrong. If you don't think there's anything wrong with it, like the kid in the public school down the block, then there's no chance you'll stop. That's what the Ben Yoyada says. That's what Ben Ishchai says. That's the same person, by the way. He just wrote two different books. He says, the first Beis HaMikdash was doing terrible things, but they knew it was wrong. There's a chance you'll stop. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, when's the last time you knew somebody who said, you know, I'm guilty of sin eschinom? A guy could admit, I didn't put on tefillin. A guy could admit, I turned on my phone on Shabbos. A guy could admit lots of things. No one will ever admit that they were a violation of sin as chinam. You know why? Because no one ever thinks it's chinam. They'll admit that they hate the guy, but that's not sin as chinam. I got a good reason. He wasn't nice to me in school. He dresses differently than me. The girl likes him and not me. Whatever. There are a lot of reasons. But we never think it's chinam. That says the Ben Ish Chai. We never think there's anything wrong. It's lo niskalu avonam. When's the last person that one time a guy went to bed thinking, you know, I really got to do better on this sin as chinam thing? And people go to bed with guilt about lots of other things. But not sin as chinam because you never think you did it. You always have a rationalization. We always have an excuse. The time has to come, gentlemen, to stop the excuses. And to realize that even if there's a reason, that doesn't make it right. You hear what I just said? Just because there's a reason doesn't make it right. Sometimes there's really no reason. That's their own insecurities and petty whatevers. And other times it's because the kid really is annoying. It's because he really isn't nice. He really... There are people like that. We all, unfortunately, have to live with them. Go to school with them. I get it. That still doesn't make it right. And unfortunately, for 2,000 years, we have not been able to learn a single lesson. Chazal say it, the rabbis say it, but the people have not taken it seriously. My grandparents' generation, clearly, they didn't take it seriously enough, still in Golos. My parents, they should live and be well, their generation, they're older now, so far not. My generation, not sure how much better we're doing, but maybe you guys can do it. Maybe you guys can be the ones. Why not? Again, unless, like, my age guys, we get our act together beforehand. I'll buy. But let's say you come home short. Why can't it be you? Why can't you guys? So you know what? I'm from Boca. He's from Los Angeles. He's from Chicago. He's from San Francisco. He's from Los Angeles. And we're all a little bit different. We'll go to different schools. We're going to go back to a different camp next summer. And a year or two, we're going to be in different yeshivas. But we came together this summer. Why can't we come together other times? You could do it. I really think you could. You just have to decide to want to. So let me end with the following, my last thing, if we're going to conclude into an evidence. The key, not the only way, not the only way, but the key is to realize the simple truth that we're on the same family. We're on the same team. Because we all make excuses for the people that we love. It's that other guy that they do one little thing wrong and he's a jerk. Unforgivable. But if you see behavior of your father who you love, you can excuse that because you love your father. You know he's a really great person. But it's the other person's father. Oh, what a jerk. Right? Yourself. Right? When we realize that we're all family. So then, again, I didn't say you have to like everybody. You know, 25 people get together for Pesach Seder, it doesn't mean they all like each other. But they love each other. They understand they're part of the family. So I want to conclude with one of my favorite scenes from the greatest hockey movie of all time. What's the greatest hockey movie of all time? Not the Mighty Ducks, okay, boys? Although that Goldberg the goalie scene is a classic. What's the thing? What's the greatest hockey movie of all time? Miracle. I'm not even a hockey player. Never once. But that's a movie. You guys all saw that movie?
Yeah.
Okay, you need to, right? You can say them, tell your madre, if the rabbi said I have to watch the movie. I think it's pretty kosher. Anyway, great movie. So what's the most famous scene of that movie? What's the most famous scene? Yes, remember, you know the story we're talking about? 1980, U.S. hockey team shocks the Russians, wins the gold. So most of the movie is before the Olympics start. It's them getting together, all the best hockey players from around America, to come together, they make the team, they're trying out, then they make the team, then they're practicing. So there's one famous, famous scene, but I have to give you the background to the scene. Earlier in the movie, at various points, the coach, who's like this coach of this all-star team, right? People from the all-star team, he asks three questions to all the players. You hear it coming out of various parts of the movie. What's your name? So I remember the one case, Mark Johnson. Where are you from? Madison, Wisconsin. Who do you play for? University of Wisconsin. And then a few months later in the movie, where they're practicing another drill or something on the ice, you hear in the background some other guy, Schlemmy Feivel. Okay, not really. I'm from Brooklyn and I play for North Dakota. But that didn't happen, but something like that. University of North Dakota is one of the hockey schools. Right? Right? Anyway, at one point when they're having their pre-Olympic games to try to get themselves in shape, that's a bad game. Either they lost a team or maybe they tied a team that they should have beaten. Anyway, what happens after that game? Who remembers? The coach, he let them have it. He makes them do suicides on skates to the line, to the blue line, to the red line, to the holder. For hours after the game, there are no more lights. They talk like guys are puking all over the ice. The legs are dying, they're collapsing. The assistant coaches are basically looking at the coach like he's a masochist. It's cruel. Basically, in today's day and age, it probably would be considered abuse. I mean, he's killing these guys. And he's ready to go. The coaches are begging to stop. The guys are dying, they're plotting all over the ice. And he blows that whistle one more time. Until finally, who remembers, how does it all stop? How does it all stop? He didn't all of a sudden get Rachmanis. That coach had no Rachmanis. How did it all stop? Because one guy, half bent over, throwing up on the ice, says, Mike Ruzioni! We're from Massachusetts! And the coach says, and who do you play for? The United States of America! Gentlemen, have a good night. I'll see you in the morning. You understand? You want to win the championship? You've got to realize you all play for the same team. Until that point, this guy played for UMass, and this guy played for Boston University, this guy played for North Dakota, University of Wisconsin, University of Minnesota. It was only once they realized that it didn't matter where they came from, it didn't matter the name on the back of the jersey, but who do you play for? The United States of America. That's when they became a championship team. And it's the same thing in life. That's why it's such a powerful scene. It doesn't matter what community you come from. It doesn't matter what school you go to. It doesn't matter where you're from. Who do you play for? You play for the Jewish people. Maybe you play offense and you play defense. You wear a black hat, he wears a gray hat, you wear no hat. You still play for the same team, the Jewish people. You do wear a gartel, you don't wear a gartel. Nusach Sfarad, Nusach Ashkenaz, Idui HaMizrach. You wear khakis, he wears only black. You prefer color, he prefers white. You're still playing for the same team. You believe that all yeshiva guys should go to the army. You think it's terrible they should never go to the army. Guess what? You are still on the same team. If you remember that, you all play for the Jewish people, then there will never be a single skill. Because we can, when it's your teammate, you live it, we'll die for them. Because we're on the same team. Because we keep one thing in mind, and that's the prize. We want to win the championship. There's a championship out there waiting for all of us. That's called the Beis HaMikdash. Previous generations have failed us. And my generation will probably, unfortunately, fail you again. But you can win the championship. you can get the basic gush if you remember what team you play for. Take care, guys. Enjoy. Whoever comes next, have a great Shabbos.